Welcome to The Download here on WGN, WGN Radio. I'm Justin Coffin. Well, my guest today is a very familiar name in Chicago politics, one that many insiders know, but we rarely hear from, Victor Reyes, an attorney in Chicago for the firm Reyes Kersen. But he's known to many as the former legislative director and aide to Mayor Richard M. Daley. Reyes is one of the guys behind HDO, the Hispanic Democratic Organization, a political action committee that was designed to organize and represent Latino politics in the city. But the group was very influential and very controversial, as many independents felt that the organization was just a way to keep the Latino vote for the mayor. But that was then. This is now. News out recently that Chuy Garcia is not running for mayor. And surprisingly, Gary Chico's in the race. But there are very few viable candidates to be the Latino representative for the race for mayor in 2019. It is my pleasure to welcome Victor Reyes to The Download today. Victor, thanks for being here.
Justin, thank you very much for
having me. Are you surprised that Gary Chico is the only name, a Latino politician, that has stepped up to run for mayor in 2019?
Yes and no. The presumptive candidate was going to be Chuy Garcia. He got 46% of the vote against Rahm the last time, and it put him into a runoff, so everyone assumed that he would be the candidate. The fact that he is not running, you would think that there would be more Latino candidates. The two that people are speculating about are Gary Chico and Susana Mendoza, who's running for comptroller now. I'm not surprised because the Latino political empowerment is still young. They don't have the political infrastructure, and they don't have more importantly, the mother's milk of politics, money. They don't have those resources. Chuy Garcia's campaign was primarily financed by unions in his last run.
And they've stayed out. They haven't yet to endorse, and they're going to go with somebody else. Right?
SEIU is with Preckwinkle.
Right,
the teachers union I had heard was leaning toward Garcia. Now I would assume they're leaning toward Preckwinkle. So that's just going to create that's going to suck up a lot of institutional money that progressive Latino candidates would otherwise get.
Do you think Chicago voters or those who are interested in Chicago politics, they recognize that the way to run for office in Chicago is to have money from downtown? I mean, you have to have that. So do you think people recognize that when they start throwing around politicians and throwing around different names that they'd like to see run for this office?
So there was a time where everybody recognized that it was patronage that was the mother's milk of politics. That's been dead for a number of years now. And so money, as you can see from the state races and the Chicago races, money has become really the driving force behind competitive elected officials. Now, you have to have a good candidate, but a good candidate with money makes you viable. A good candidate with no money doesn't make you viable.
For all that's been vilified, when patronage has been vilified to death in this town, I mean, there were decrees that came out about it. But you see, this is the result of the death of patronage is self-financed huge money into campaigns. Is it a good thing that we have all of this money in the race for Chicago mayor?
So I don't think it's a good thing for democracy. It's a good thing for oligarchies and folks that want to have the wealthy control the electoral process. If that's where you're coming from, that's a good thing. But if you're just a regular Joe average citizen, I got my fair share of grief over patronage, but I think that was a little more democratic than just the oligarchs that could afford to run do it today.
How'd you get your start in Chicago politics?
So, I was in law school and I worked, I was in law school at the time. I worked the precinct for a colleague of mine, a friend of mine, who's now a state senator, and he wanted me to help him out. I helped him out. He asked me, hey, do you want to come and work in City Hall? I said, no, I'm going to go to law school and I'm going to be a hotshot lawyer. And so he and my sister drafted a resume for me. Turned it in without my knowledge. I got called in for an interview. At the time, my wife and I combined were making $36,000 a year, and I was offered a job for $32,000. And I said, well, wait a second. I'm going to almost double my income. I'm taking the job. So I switched over to night law school, finished while I was working in City Hall. And I worked
and
for
what year was this?
Oh, boy, 89. So I worked for Rich Daley for 12 years, and finished as his government affairs director, and have been in private practice for the last, 16?
We'll stay in the history part of this. It's interesting because you rose the ranks. You started as an assistant, like you said, with a $32,000 a year job, but you were able to be promoted and promoted and promoted. How did that happen?
Well, obviously, hard work. Rich Daley was very supportive of the Latino community. I think probably more than anybody in the history of Illinois or Chicago, and since, you know, had the first fire Latino fire commissioner, the first police Latino police commissioner, the first Latino chief of staff, the first director of intergovernmental affairs. He very, very much promoted the Latino community. And so I think he saw some talent in me and gave me opportunities, both political and governmentally. And it was a thrill and an honor to work for him. I got to meet presidents. I got to work on presidential elections. I got to meet foreign presidents, governors. You know, I got access to some really cool stuff when I worked for him.
I'm fascinated with Latino politics and the history of it, mm-hmm. because especially recent history in the 80s, 70s, 80s, 90s, because a lot of the independents who represented the Latino vote that came out of Harold Washington's, mm-hmm. You think of Luis Gutierrez, yeah. Chuy Garcia is the name that comes to mind. But there's that sort of progressive movement. And then there's the HGO folks, mm-hmm. you and mm-hmm. Al Sanchez and others who were a part of the Mayor Daley administration and also the Democratic machine. Mm-hmm. I would love to explore that. Sure. The division. You mm-hmm. had those guys on one side and you on the other. How did that play out, and what was the impact on the Latino community in Chicago as a whole?
So, you know, I personally believe that the Latino community is not all progressive and not all moderate, right? And so the folks that I tended to do more politics with were moderate. These labels of moderate and progressive are labels that separate folks by millimeters. Almost 99.9% of the issues that Chuy supports, the moderate guys will support. Everybody's for immigration reform. Everybody's for a lot of progressive issues. But there's some things like the police, right? Latinos support the police at a higher rate than African Americans, and probably in some cases at a higher rate than white voters. And so the level of support for law enforcement is a little bit different, or that's one of the significant mm-hmm. differentiators between progressives and moderate Latinos. So law enforcement and certain other issues, but most issues they're together on. Chuy and a lot of his supporters, they love the label of progressive. They love to be against the establishment. Whatever the establishment is, they like to be in that role, in that position, and that's always been a comfortable role for Chuy and his supporters. And the guys who tend to be more moderate like to be supportive of the establishment and focus more on economic development, building structure, schools, building infrastructure, whereas the progressives tend to be more about social policy issues.
Interesting.
So there's a difference.
That's the division. I've always, you know, reading the book Boss, yeah. and you talk about how mayors in the past have been able to control different ethnicities or ethnic groups by giving them positions of power in certain ways, mm-hmm. but also being in control to not let that demographic rise up and take the power. That's the idea of how and for Mayor Daley to be supportive of different Latino politicians mm-hmm. or different government officials or even law enforcement officials is great. But there always has been this thought and this notion that he did that to make sure that nobody rose up against him and beat him from a Latino population. Do you see it that way?
No, I don't, because I think that anybody who has power wants to keep power from anyone, right? So Mitch McConnell doesn't want to give up his power, and Pelosi was not going to want to give up her power, and Mike Madigan doesn't want to give. So the fact that power wants to keep the power, regardless of race, it's not surprising, right? I think, you know, the one thing I would say is that when Rich first ran for mayor, I think he got single digit African American support, 65 plus support from white and Latino, and then his single digits doubled, and then they doubled again, and to the point where he was up in the 50 plus range. So he earned the support of the African American community.
Do you think that he learned from his father, or even from his first race where he lost to Harold Washington, how important it was to at least, I would say at least, I don't want to say honor, but at least acknowledge ethnic populations in the city?
Well, not only did he acknowledge them, he brought them into the tent, right? He gave them reasons to go from 6% support to 50% support with respect to the African-American community. With respect to the Latino community, he started with 65% and grew it up into the 70s, but he did that by letting them be real participants in his governance. He was very big on redistricting. Under his tenure, you saw new Senate districts, new House districts, and new aldermanic districts created. And it's a very delicate balance to keep the Latino support while you're gaining African-American support. Those groups are not always
in sync with each other. Absolutely.
And so to be able to balance the interests of the Latino community and the African-American community and maintain your white vote, you know, that takes some doing.
We could talk about this all day. I'm fascinated about how history looks at the HDO, yeah, because the HDO had, and Al Sanchez, of course, and the patronage scandals, where we, you know, there this idea of pay to play, or that if you do work for a campaign, you will get, you're a city worker, you do work for a campaign or for an official, you'll make sure to keep your job. And there's a lot of talk about how, that's how HDO ran. It kept Latino workers in line to be able to vote for the mayor and get the vote out for the mayor, and they would be rewarded as such. Is that a fair assessment in looking back at HDO, at what the goal and the mission was of that organization?
The goal, as far as I was concerned, and I was chairman, was to create Latino empowerment, wherever it may be. Right, so we helped elect Susana Mendoza. We helped elect a bunch of state senators, state representatives. We created, I believe, the base upon which many other Latinos have been able to progress from, progressive and moderate. So, you know, at the very beginning, there was only a few state reps, a few maybe two state senators, and not as many aldermen. So the work of HDO created the foundation upon which other Latino elected officials can then progress from. You know, I have my own theory about what happened with Al, who's a dear friend of mine. You know, in my mind, he's the first person that had ever been prosecuted for patronage and probably the last person in the history, because it was just an unfortunate situation. I don't believe that criminalizing politics is a smart thing to do. But, you know, I don't think anybody will ever be prosecuted.
Because of that, I mean, and it's just interesting looking back, because if you talk to people who are from Chicago, follow Chicago politics, and you say HDO, they automatically think in their head that is a corrupt organization, or that there was something, because Al went to jail, and but this idea of that, because of the patronage and the way that politics was ran at the time, that this was, that you look back on it, that it had nefarious goals and missions as opposed to what it was set out to do.
So two things I would make an observation of. There's been a number of elections where people have either tried to make me the issue or HDO the issue, and in every one of those elections, the candidate that I was supporting worked for won. Why? Nobody knows what an HDO is. We act as if people know.
Right.
Nobody really knows what it is.
Right.
It's so inside baseball that nobody really, really knows. They know the ideas of patronage. And, you know, and so, you know, you could argue that there's something corrupt about patronage and it's not allowed, or whatever the rationale is. And so, as we see now, I believe that the politics has become more hidden, more behind the scenes, more driven by money, more driven by insider.
Even as politicians say they're transparent and there's all these laws for transparency, you think that it's more hidden than ever?
Oh, sure, sure. You know, water finds its level, right? So pinstripe patronage is, you know, as rampant as ever, and it's a different form of patronage, I think, a more insidious form of patronage. But, you know, to anybody that tells you that there's not patronage going on in government, it would be either not in government or lying.
The other statement you hear all the time, and you see some kind of crackerjack kind of political punditry, is this idea that the Chicago machine is dead. You know, there's no machine candidates anymore. The machine as we knew it is not viable. There's no candidate comes out of that. What's your assessment on that as someone who worked for Mayor Richard M. Daley, that was a part of, you know, the HDO and patronage? Yeah. Where is the Chicago machine dead?
So I would argue that the machine was dead well before Rich Daley got into office.
Oh, okay.
And this notion that whether it's HDO or so-and-so were part of this machine, as I mentioned, HDO would not be able to ever have existed if there was a machine. Because those guys would say, well, wait, we've got to keep the Latinos, you know, quiet and subdued, whereas we were able to get them excited, get them registered, and get them active. So to me, not just that, but also I get to see a lot of committeemen organizations. I get to see a lot of ward organizations, and they are nowhere near what they were 20 years ago. But politics is different, right? Where knocking on doors used to matter a lot. Today, social media matters, what people see on Facebook, what people see in your show and media with the conversation. Right. That public conversation has a lot more influence on politics today than what the machine had 10 years ago, 15 years ago. But I can tell you just from observers, there's maybe two or three ward organizations that can deliver the vote.
As we, as we are in the midst of a municipal election that's coming up in 2019, the mayor of Chicago, Rahm Emanuel, says not seeking re-election. As a political observer and someone who had been in a political office, but also in government, when a politic or when a mayor says he's not running again, what happens? What's happening behind the scenes? What do we not know about? Is everybody raising their hand? Is there one big meeting, smoke-filled room, where they say this is our candidate? What's happening when a powerful politician like Rahm Emanuel says he's not running for re-election?
So I it's interesting. I met with the mayor the week before. To talk about his election the week before he announced. It did create a firestorm of activity. Way more people want to be considered for the office than you're even hearing about. There's probably 15 people. So it does create a vacuum. Power abhors a vacuum. And so right now there's a scramble to fill it. I've had the opportunity to meet with or talk with at least five of the leading candidates to talk about the election cycle. To a newspaper reporter who asked me which way I was leaning, I said I'm leaning, toward Preckwinkle for various reasons. But there's all kinds of machinations going on, and not just with the politicians, but with the institutions. The money guys, the union guys, the business community. So right now there's a big movement. Everybody's trying to see who they can get on board to do endorsement, political support, financial support. It's all happening now. At the same time, they're getting their petitions out on the street. Some of these announced candidates or some of the candidates that expressed an interest, they may not even be able to get on the ballot,
right,
much less run for office, because you need 12,500 signatures. Typically, you want to file twice or three times the amount. I helped coordinate Kwame Raoul's signature gathering. We think we filed excess of 30,000. It's not easy.
Not easy.
Not easy. So some of the folks who are saying they want to run for mayor may not even be able to get on the ballot. So there's a lot of machinations. I don't feel like there's any one centralized place who's orchestrating all of this. I think that did happen when Rahm ran. I think that was very much an orchestrated ascendancy to the mayor. I don't think that's happening now. And I got to give Rahm a little bit of credit for announcing so early. That if he could have done the same thing that was done when he came into office,
right,
where he waits till the last minute
to give whoever
they anoint somebody,
and
the voters don't have a good chance.
For you to now be in private practice and you do political consulting and you're an attorney, do you miss the day-to-day of being in government? Do you miss the idea of having working for a mayor and being on that side of it as opposed to the private sector?
No, not at all.
Why not? You seem like it runs through your blood.
The pay is the pay is terrible, and when I worked for Rich, there was a sense of loyalty and mission. I got one of the senses I had from folks who worked in the Rahm in the Emanuel administration is it was more transactional, trying to get ahead, build a resume so they can go out and do what I'm able to do now. Right? There's no some of the leadership these days are all about trying to build a resume, trying to set themselves up for the next opportunity, as opposed to a sense of mission. And that I don't like, and I don't like the amount of scrutiny that all these from the lowest level person to the highest level person. It just doesn't feel like it would be fun to work in government.
All right, my last question for you is you saw a mayor in Emanuel who refused to load up problems on the back of his predecessor, right? Or the Mayor Daley. And you see now...
Did you say refused?
Yeah, refused. Yeah, wouldn't say it was Daley's fault.
Well, no, he did blame Rich for a lot of the financial problems.
Right, okay.
And so in that regard, And you know, there was some tension there with the notion that the mayor tended to blame the financial problems
on the person before him.
Yeah.
Okay, let me rephrase it. As history looks back on the Daley legacy, the 25 years of Richard M. Daley, will it be kind? Will Chicago remember Mayor Daley as a great leader, or will the problems that were created and continue to dog us, whether it be fiscal or violence on the streets of Chicago, will they always kind of point back?
So I believe that history will be kind because he was a builder. A lot of the benefits that you're seeing in the city today, the cranes all over the place and the construction boom and the river walk, a lot of the really positive things were started under his tenure, and Rahm was smart enough to see them through. He made a number of mistakes, and after 20 years, you're going to make some mistakes. And I also think that some of the financial problems that the city has suffered through were not all the result of Daley's tenure. They were a result of Springfield and Chicago, and maybe some poor decisions. I don't think that Rahm is completely incorrect in saying that the prior administration created these issues, but he at the same time has raised taxes by $2 billion. So in effect, what he's saying is, if Rich Daley had increased taxes by $2 billion, I wouldn't have to.
Right. So he's looking for someone else to blame.
Correct. But I do think people will recognize that during his tenure, the murder rate is not what it is today or has been under Rahm's tenure, but there were certain things that he did that sparked some of the real growth and progress that you see in Chicago. I don't think any mayor has made a tremendous amount of progress in improving lives for people like in Englewood and the West Side. I think that's a chronic problem that requires a Marshall Plan in order to turn those communities around.
Well, we'll see what the new candidates have to say about that. Victor Reyes, longtime city hall worker, was legislative affairs for Mayor Richard M. Daley, as well as an attorney at Reyes Kirsten. Thanks so much for coming in, talking with me about Chicago politics. I appreciate it.
Just thank you for having me, and I really dig your new studios.